Before we can actually even go into the session for the night, I really, 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 really want to, I really want to touch on, I really want to touch on the aspect of seeking because, and I want to touch it in passing, really, just very briefly. Now, last night we started looking at something, and one of the things we started saying was that there are many people that are being called to the unknown path. They are being called into places that have yet been explored. So when I say the unknown path, I'm really referring to realms and dimensions in God that have yet been that are yet to be explored. And because they have not yet been explored, it's basically people starting out on a new path, starting out on something that has got no earthly parallel, something that has got no earthly template. There are several things that do not necessarily have an earthly template, and it would take men that will seek them out to introduce them to their generation as something that we can all experience. For example, Jesus in John chapter number 3 encounters one of the highest level teachers. Okay, Jesus in John 3 encounters one of the highest level teachers. Now, Jesus has been teaching several times. He has been teaching several times, and people have not been understanding the teachings of Jesus. They've not been understanding the teachings of Jesus as Jesus has been teaching. And so in John 3, when he encounters a high level teacher by the name of Nicodemus, well, Jesus is really excited. He's psyched about this meeting. He's excited that he's going to be meeting a man called Nicodemus because Nicodemus was a high-level teacher of his time. And so he encounters Nicodemus, says, "Well, finally, at least I could discuss with someone at a very high level." And then Jesus begins to address Nicodemus. And as he's addressing Nicodemus, he starts with one little simple subject of the aspect or the subject of actually being born again. And to Jesus's shock, Nicodemus says, "Well, when you talk about being born again, what do you actually mean?" And Nicodemus said something that was really, really off. Says, "Do you mean that I have to go back into my mother's womb?" And Jesus was so shocked that he encountered a high-level teacher of whom he was very, very excited to talk about the realities of heaven with. But when he starts to talk about the realities of heaven with Nicodemus, and he starts with something as as easy as being born again in Jesus's perspective, and Nicodemus does not necessarily understand. He says, "Do I have to go back into my mother's womb?" And Jesus's response is that, "Nicodemus, if you don't understand earthly things, how much more if I explain to you heavenly things?" What is Jesus saying there? What he's saying, in other words, is that if I am explaining to you heavenly things that have got an earthly template and you can't understand them, how much more if I begin to explain heavenly things that have got no earthly template? For example, there are heavenly things that have got earthly templates. You can encounter something in heaven, and if you're explaining to someone, you can say, "Well, the process of being regenerated in the spirit is similar to that of being born again." So that is a heavenly experience with an earthly template. Okay, for example, if I see something in heaven, I can come back and say, "Well, I don't really know what it was, but it looked like a sea made out of glass. Let's call it the sea of glass." So I had an encounter in the realm of heaven, but when I was describing it to people, I was describing it using earthly templates. For example, when you hear someone say the door of heaven, okay, you hear someone say the windows of heaven, you hear the gates of heaven. I have encountered the gates of heaven before. I have encountered the windows of heaven before. I have encountered the doors of heaven before. Many of them are just transition points. They're just portals that allow you to transition from one realm to the other. So when you encounter a gate of heaven, you will be shocked that it does not necessarily look like a gate. However, when God is trying to bring it to your natural understanding, he may use an earthly template for you to understand a portal, which is a place of transition. Okay, so he will use an earthly template that you can relate with. So now Jesus meets Nicodemus, and he's saying, "I am explaining to you heavenly things with earthly templates, and you can't understand them. How much more if I explain heavenly things with no earthly template? For example, if I see a color in heaven, Okay, if I see a color in heaven, I can come back to you and say, well, the color I saw looks like something, you know, like brown, like black, or like blue, like green, like red. I can actually give you some earthly templates. Say, it looks something like reddish. It looks something like burgundy. It looks something like, you know, violet. It looks something like, you know, whatever color it is that you point at. Okay, so I'm trying to explain a heavenly reality with an earthly template. However, there are also colors I have encountered in heaven that have no earthly template. There is nowhere you can point at and say it looks like it, even using a metaphor such as it looks like is not something you can even start, because there is no earthly template to point at. Those are things that are yet to be explored, that men can explore things that have got no earthly parallel and bring them to the realm of the earth. It's where now we bring things that are new to the face of the earth by our pursuit and our exploration of the realms of God. So we've been looking at this issue to deal with pursuit, this issue to deal with pursuit. Now, I want to add this before I go into some of the notes for the night. I want to go into the fact that many people have been pursuing. Okay, this is one thing I know. Many people have been seeking, many people have been pursuing. However, one of the things you discover that even in their pursuit, as they have been pursuing, many people have not necessarily found. Because it's not just the issue to deal with pursuit, okay? It's not just the issue to deal with pursuit in heaven. Heaven is an environment that deals with things like trade. Let me put it like that. Heaven works with trade. You don't just get something from the realm of heaven until there is something that has gone into the realm of the heavens. Okay, so for something to come to the realm of the earth, it means something from the, for something to come from the realm of heaven to the realm of the earth, it means something from the realm of the earth ascended into the realm of heaven. Okay, that became a trade for something in the realm of heaven to come to the face of the earth. Let me slow down because I don't want to lose anyone. Okay, I'll say that again. For something from the realm of heaven to come to the face of the earth, it means something from the realm of the earth went up into the realm of heaven. Okay, and then something from the realm of heaven was actually released. Okay, so heaven works on such principles. If something is going to be released from the realm of the heavens to the earth, it may mean that faith has ascended into that realm and acted as a trade. That's why many of you say faith is the currency of heaven. Okay, faith is the currency of heaven because you can use faith to buy of a spiritual reality in the realm of the heavens. So it's not just about being in a place where you are saying, well, I am pursuing, Lord, I am seeking, but something is not being released into my life. Something is not being, being ushered into my life. There's no ripple effect into what I'm pressing into what I'm seeking. It's because there is nothing leaving your life and ascending into the realm of heaven as something that could actually play as currency there. So there are different things that are currency in heaven. And if you learn these different currencies of heaven, you will find that trading with heaven becomes easy. Manifesting a reality in heaven becomes something that you can easily do because you have learned of different currencies. All the generals, all the people that actually got to a place where they saw certain realities in God, the revivalists that saw certain dimensions in God, they knew certain currencies of heaven, certain things that they could actually use to bargain with the realm of heaven for something in the realm of the heavens to be released. Praise the name of the Lord. So there are different types of these things. One of them is desire. Okay, one of them is desire. Desire is a currency in heaven. Desire is a force that you can actually use in heaven. Your desire is one of the things that you will actually trade into the realm of heaven to receive a reality from heaven. So as you are pursuing and as you are seeking, there must be desire. That is why when Paul is speaking of spiritual gifts, he says, earnestly desire spiritual gifts. earnestly desire spiritual gifts. He's not saying earnestly pray for them, because the Corinthian church at the time was a church that prayed in tongues so much that they abused the ideal of praying in tongues. So if they are not walking in spiritual gifts, the problem of the Corinthian church is not because they are not praying, is not because they are not fasting. I mean, Paul literally had to write an entire chapter to instruct them on how they should pray in tongues in an orderly manner. That's how much they prayed in tongues, that Paul had to write an entire disposition to bring them into alignment as to how they should pray in tongues. So when you're talking to the Corinthian church and you notice that they are not having spiritual gifts, the issue is not prayer. Okay, the issue is not that they are fasting, and that is the issue with many of you. Pastor, I have been fasting. Pastor, I'm a prayer machine. Pastor, I labor. Pastor, I don't know which fast I have never done. However, my life has got no reality consistent with the amount of fasting that I am doing. The issue is that you have not found something that you could use as a trade to buy of a spiritual reality in the realm of heaven. So Paul comes to the Corinthian church and he begins to introduce them to a spiritual reality called desire, which is that when you desire something, desire has got the force to pull something from the realm of heaven. So he says, earnestly desire spiritual gifts. You will notice that the gift that you are most likely desiring is the gift that you will most likely walk in. Anything that you are not desiring, you will not find yourself actually walking in. Okay, so you will notice that two people may go to a place of prayer. Two people may go to a place of prayer. They all begin to pray. They all begin to pray in tongues. They all begin to pray in tongues. They all begin to pray in tongues. However, when they begin to minister, you will notice that their manifestations will differ. The reason why their manifestations are differing is because their desires are anchored in different realities. So the reality of which you have been anchored into is the reality of which you will be manifesting. So desire becomes a force that can actually help you in your seeking process. As you begin to forge ahead in prayer and fasting, you must build desire. Because if something has got weight in your heart, it will have weight in heaven. Okay, if it carries weight in your heart, it will have weight in heaven. And if it has weight in heaven, it can be released to you in your environment. So desire becomes a powerful force. That is why when I begin to pray into something, I must build sufficient desire in that particular reality so that I have some weight in my heart to pull onto something from the realm of heaven. So if I'm desiring the prophetic, I don't just start praying and expect that the prophetic must come. No, I must build sufficient desire for the prophetic by watching different prophetic ministries until I'm ruined for nothing. Have you ever been in a place where you watch a man minister in a certain way until you get to a place where you're so ruined for that type of administration that you say, Lord, all I want is to move like this man. All I want is to move in this type of dimension. It's because desire has been built up. And you will notice that when you begin to pray, your desire is an anchor in the realm of heaven that pulls down that reality of which you are desiring. So you need to learn to trade with heaven through desire. Okay? The other thing is value. Are things that you value. Heaven is generous, but heaven is not wasteful. So heaven will never give you any reality that you don't value. If you don't value a spiritual reality, heaven will never release that reality to you. So you will realize that the realities of which you value are the realities which will ripple into your life. That is why you will discover that if you have been anchored into issues to deal with healing, you will find that healing will be manifesting. But if you don't value prosperity, you will be a healing preacher that is poor. Okay, if you value prosperity, you will find that prosperity will be something that is consistent with your life. But if you've not anchored your reality into the healing ministry, one of the things you will discover is that you will be wealthy, but you will find yourself spending money on the hospital, on things that are supposed to handle your health. So you have to be in a place where you understand the things that heaven can view as trading points and as currency. Another thing that you can use to trade in the realm of heaven is compassion. Okay, compassion is one of the realities that God uses to allow people to trade with heaven, to pull onto certain realities. Haven't you noticed that when Jesus moves about different cities, healing the sick, okay, and preaching the gospel, he would meet people that were sick, and the Bible says that he was moved with compassion. It was his moving with compassion that would allow for a reality of the power of God in his life. So when you are moved with compassion, one of the things you would discover is that there will be a ripple effect into the realm of heaven. So sometimes as you begin to seek out for something, you would have been praying for something, you've been praying for years, seeking out a certain dimension in God, you are not seeing it consistent with your life. God may say, what I need to forge into your life is compassion. And when you have compassion, compassion will be an acceptable currency that you can use to buy into a spiritual reality. And if I say buy, please, I'm just limited in language. So quote unquote, for lack of better words, I use buy. Okay, but it's not necessarily that, but it's something you can use to trade into the realm of heaven. Why? Because you are moved with compassion. That is why for some people to move into this particular reality where they have this currency of compassion, for some people, God would have to use a painful experience in your life to stir compassion. He has to use a painful experience in your life to stir compassion that draws a certain reality from the realm of heaven to your generation. Now, we've looked at theodicy, so I don't want to go into the fact of, does God do bad things to teach me a story, or does God, you know, send sickness so that he can teach me compassion? I think we've done that, and we handled theodicy in last revival seminar, so I don't really want to go into that. But if something negative ever happens to you, God will use that, okay? God may use that as we looked at last time, that all things work for good for they that love the Lord. So there's no disadvantage for a man that loves the Lord. So sometimes for some of you, what you have been desiring to manifest in your generation needs the currency of compassion. One of the things that made me very compassionate about people experiencing fear is when I had such deep fear some years ago. I had such deep fear. I've shared the story several times on my podcast. You can get the messages on fear. I had such deep fear that I felt I would die. Okay. And when I was laying on my bed, I felt my spirit leaving my body, and the devil told me, I will kill you tonight. Okay. And fear gripped my soul. I have never experienced fear like that. And that's when I knew that fear can be so dangerous and so deadly. Now, before this point in time, everyone I was ministering to that came with fear, I wasn't seeing so many results. Okay, I would pray for them. But when I had that deep fear, God decided to use it as a trigger for compassion. So anytime anyone tells me I am experiencing fear, compassion wells up in my spirit. And all of a sudden, an authority that I never knew I had will ripple from the realm of heaven into my life. I can release it into a generation. So some of you, the things that you experience, the enemy meant them for bad. The enemy meant them to destroy you. But those things, God has used them as triggers of compassion that help your pursuit. So sometimes you begin to pray for different souls. You begin to labor because you know what it means to lose a brother, to lose a relative that never knew the Lord. So God begins to stir that compassion within your spirit. And sometimes you will find yourself in a place where you begin to pray for souls, and it will be like you are in the labor room. As you are laboring in intercession, you move in groanings that cannot be uttered for your generation. Why? Because you have experienced what it's like to lose someone that never knew the Lord, someone that was so precious and they never knew the Lord. And so sometimes when you begin to labor for souls, we can all start praying and we start screaming, oh Lord, the souls in Zambia. The souls in Zambia. Meanwhile, when you begin to pray for souls, you will utter one word and you move into groanings. I have seen people sometimes begin to labor in intercession. And when they begin to labor in intercession, you can tell that we are interceding at different frameworks altogether. Because sometimes a man will begin to pray for souls and say, Lord, you know the heart that I have for these souls. And they begin to pray. And as the man begins to pray, you literally feel like the Isaiah 61 prayer. Oh Lord, that you'd rend the heavens open and come down. Because a man knows, Okay, a man knows what it feels like to lose someone that never knew the Lord. Some of us are not used living life without the move of God. Some of us, God had to take us to a place of pain, ministering without an anointing, ministering without the glory, going to ministry and being embarrassed because the things you promised people, they never saw those things come to life. So God used that pain to allow you to go back to the place of intercession. That is why if you've experienced pain, you prayed for someone and they never got healed. You ministered to someone, instead of getting healed, they actually died. That pain should not allow you to question God. That pain should take you back to the secret place and say, Lord, I prayed for a sick person in your name and I never saw healing. Why is it so? And you will notice that your compassion will begin to well up. And when your compassion wells up, there is something that moves every time you see a sick person. And you will notice that many of the generals that ministered certain types of healings, you will notice that the designation of healing they moved into was either tied to their life or someone that was close to them had a similar condition. So every time they see a deaf ear, it's like compassion wells up because they have lived with someone that has got a deaf ear. They know all the problems that go around that. Compassion is welling up, and a dimension that was trapped in the spirit that could never have had expression in the realm of the earth, even with 40 days of fasting, all of the sudden rippled into the realm of the earth because compassion welled up, because compassion becomes a currency that you can actually trade into the realm of heaven. The reason why I'm sharing all these currencies, all these keys, is because you need to learn how to allow those things to well up. Sometimes when I experience a certain type of pain, I allow that pain. And I heard, was it Justin Paul Abrams that he said something very interesting? I heard him say something. He says, there is a place you get to where even pain becomes a friend that pushes you to the very center of God's being. I don't know if you've ever experienced that pain before. I don't know, but he says even pain becomes a friend that pushes you to the very center of his being. That's the pain that gets people to a place where they begin to seek out for things in the spirit and they allow it to ripple into the realm of the earth. Has pain ever been such a thing, a friend that is pushing you into the very center of his being? I have experienced that pain before. I have experienced that pain before. It's a paradox, really, that you're in such pain, but that pain becomes a friend that is pushing you into the very center of his being. It's something you don't really explain. It's only the hand of God, okay? So all these currencies should be integrated into your seeking, into your pursuit. So as you are fasting, integrate desire, integrate compassion, integrate value. And the other thing that I want you to integrate is desperation. Desperation, okay? Desperation. Desperation becomes that thing that you can actually use to trade into the realm of heaven, to get certain realities. The men and women of God, the revivalists that we read about, that experienced different dimensions in God, did not only experience those dimensions because they were praying more than everyone else. Everyone was praying, and I believe that there were other men of God that were praying like them. How is it that they didn't see revival? Okay, I believe that there were men that were praying, fasting like them, and maybe even more. But how is it that those men did not see revival? Is God partial? No. But the thing is that there was these currencies in their heart, the value, the desire. And one of such currencies is desperation. These men were desperate. They were not just praying in tongues for 10 hours. Their tongues were desperate. I can assure you, 1 hour of desperate prayer is different from 12 hours of prayer that is apathetic. I'll say that again. 1 hour of desperate prayer is different with 12 hours of prayer that is apathetic. There is a weight that desperation has that pulls onto realities from the realm of heaven because a man is desperate. A man has reached a place of brokenness. You know, when people pray the prayers we actually read of, the famous prayers we actually read of, these were prayers that were desperate. When Moses is praying, Lord, even an angel will not satisfy. Even an angel for me is not enough. I want God. God. I want all that you are. It was a place of desperation. It was a place of desperation. When a man like John Knox prayed, give me Scotland or I die. It wasn't a prayer to threaten God. You know, many people today are not praying prayers of desperation. They are praying prayers of threatening. There's a difference between a prayer of threatening and a prayer of desperation. A prayer of desperation is that I have come to the end of myself. God, if you don't do this thing, I see no other way. I see no other reality. I see no essence for life if I don't see this reality. These days, people are praying prayers of threats and they say it's desperation. No, it's not desperation. It's threatening. Mwele sangata mwampelende fileka. Fileke. And you will see everything will continue. You know, many people pray prayers like, give me Sister Joy or I die. It's a desperate prayer. Okay, it's a threat, not a desperate prayer. So many people are praying prayers that, you know, are threatening prayers. You can't put God under pressure. He's ancient. He's been there before the beginning of time itself. So threats are not something that God is moved by. He's moved by desperation. So if you are threatening God, you are wasting time. Many of the prayers we see by these desperate men of God, by these revivalists, were prayers of desperation. When John Knox prayed, Lord, give me Scotland or I die. The man was praying a desperate prayer. He got to a place where he sees no essence for life. He sees no other way apart from the fact that God would give him Scotland or he dies. Desperation. And something broke forth like the Isaiah 61 prayer. Oh God, that you'd rend the heavens open and come down. These were desperate men. They saw no other way. They saw no other way. They were desperate. They were crying out to God. And that is why I agree with Bobby Connor when he says, I am satisfied with what God has done for me, but I am dissatisfied with what God can do through me. He says, I am dissatisfied with what God has done for me, but I am dissatisfied with what God can do through me. I am satisfied with what God has done for me is that I agree, I am happy with the price that was paid, the ultimate price. But with regards the level of God that I am manifesting, I am dissatisfied. So I am satisfied with the fact that Jesus was paid as a price for my life. I am satisfied in that reality, but I am dissatisfied in the reality of God that I am manifesting in my generation. They were desperate men that made desperate prayer, desperate men that made desperate prayer. When Father Nash would pray with Ebo Clary concerning Charles Finney's meetings, the men would go into a room, sometimes would go 3 days before a meeting. 3 days before a meeting, they would go ahead of Charles Finney into a town where Charles Finney would be holding a meeting, and the men would begin to make desperate prayer. Father Nash and Ebo Clary sometimes would stay for 3 days groaning until the men would pray so much that they would even move into groanings that, you know, would literally shake places. That when Charles Finney would go to cities would come to stand still. Cities would come to stand still. Charles Finney is the only man that has got the 90% retention in crusades. These days, we only retain 30% of all the converts. So if 1,000 people give their lives to the Lord, the only 300 will be retained as people that will serve and be committed. Charles Finney had 90 of 1,900 will return. 900 of them will return and abide. Why? Because of intercession. The men would intercede. The men were of like passion. They were desperate to see God in their generation. It wasn't just prayer that they were praying, 12 hours of prayer. Some of you are praying for 12 hours and you are, you know, you're praying for 12 hours and you are thinking about the pie that you left in the fridge, the yogurt that you left in the fridge. It's not desperate prayer. These men were so desperate. The things they achieved by desperation, we are trying to achieve, you know, by threatening. Okay, God, I'm going to give you 12 hours. If you don't do something, there'll be trouble. No, these men achieved these things by desperation. That is why when you read that these men prayed, a man prayed for 3 days continuously, nonstop. He was desperate. He was in a desperate place, and desperation caused something from the realm of heaven to manifest into the realm of the earth. Now, these are some of the things I want you to integrate to your pursuit.
These are some of the things that I want you to integrate to your pursuit. Now, I want to read 1 Corinthians 12, 1 to 11. 1 Corinthians 12, 1 to 11. Woo! These days, I'm really getting carried away, okay? If I continued on this train, maybe I would have not looked at any of the notes that I have tonight. So, because I've taken much of the time, it seems this revival seminar is for just giving charges, because I feel the notes you have, what notes don't you have that I've not taught you? I've done 2 revival seminars. That's 10 sessions, 10 whole sessions. Okay, I've done 2 revival seminars. That's 10 sessions. So knowledge you have, what I'm giving you is charges that you go and act upon. 1 Corinthians 12, 1. 1 Corinthians 12 and chapter number 1. Now about the gifts of the Spirit, brothers and sisters, I do not want you uninformed. You know that when you were pagans, somehow or other, you were influenced and led astray to mute idols. Therefore, I want you to know that no one who is speaking by the Spirit of God says Jesus be cursed, and no one can say Jesus is Lord except by the Spirit. Okay, there are different types of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. There are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of workings, but in all of them and in everyone, it is the same God at work. It is the same God at work. Okay, so now Paul is speaking to the Corinthian church, and he is telling them that there are diversities of ministries. There are diversities of manifestations, there are diversities of service, but it is God in all at work, okay? It is God in all at work. Now, when God is doing something in our generation, okay, or in a generation, okay, our understanding and revelation of what he is doing is more important than your experience of what he is doing, okay? Your understanding of what God is doing is far more important than your experience of what he is doing. Sometimes we experience certain things and not know why God is doing those things. Okay, so we are just happy that, oh, great, God is doing this. You know, people are getting slain and people are enjoying God. But the question is that if people are getting slain and people are enjoying God, for what purpose, for what reason are people getting slain? What is the reason for the manifestation that God is actually releasing? If you don't know the purpose of a thing, like Dr. Miles Monroe said, anytime you do not know the purpose of a thing, abuse is inevitable. So you must understand what God is doing in a generation. And if you understand what God is doing in a generation, we will not truncate revival through jealousy. Many of the revivals were truncated through jealousy. Okay, many of the revivals were truncated through jealousy, because you realize that in revival, one of the strongest things that we must have in revival is unity. When the early church started, you realize that consistently, as you read in the book of Acts, they were together in one accord. 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 Why? Because unity is a powerful ingredient of revival. Now, if people don't understand the different designations and the different functionaries in a revival, one of the things that begins to happen is jealousy. And when jealousy begins to happen, it truncates revivals. The revivals of the 60s died because of jealousy. Haven't you read of the revivals, the tent revival meetings? People were constantly trying to figure out who has got the biggest tent, who has got the biggest tent movement, that revivalists would hire people by night. Okay, I was reading this of the revivals in the 60s, especially the Voice of Healing, the Voice of Healing movement. Okay, revivalists would hire people by night to go and measure another person's tent. Okay, because they were using tents there for their meetings. So someone would go with a measuring tape and say, okay, their tent is 500 meters, or, you know, these number of meters. So for us to beat them, let us do 600 meters. Okay, it was in those revivals, the Jack calls, and in those 10 meetings, people were actually measuring, because people did not necessarily understand specific designations in that particular revival. So jealousy was sprouting through their hearts. Okay, it was also said that it was in that time that companies, okay, that would rent out people started making a lot of money. Let me just take some water. My throat is starting to give me problems. Praise the Lord. So, Hallelujah. It was in those times that people started companies that would rent out people for your meeting. So you say, okay, Ndemena had a crusade. How many people were in Ndemena's crusade? Okay, Ndemena had 500,000 people in his crusade. Okay, I want to beat that number. You go to a company, they have got packages and you can pay them. They say, okay, if you pay us this much, we'll guarantee you that 700,000 people will come. These are people that work for them. They have hired a lot of people. And if you pay them, they'll send them out. I don't mean that people were paid to help you advertise. No, they have people with them. They already have 2,000 people. They already have 3,000 people. Those are dummy people that have not even come to engage. Ghost members of sorts. Okay, ghost members. Literally, it was in that time that people were doing that because people never understood their callings. They never understood their assignments. And that's why Paul is telling us that there are diversities of gifts. There are diversities of service, but the same God. And you must understand where God has called you to be. You must understand where God has called you to be. So every revival or move of God that is released upon the face of the earth has a specific functionary and purpose. And every minister equally has a specific functionary and purpose in that move. So every revival has a purpose, okay? Every revival has a purpose. When God is releasing moves of God, every move of God has got a purpose. There is a purpose for everything that God is doing. Okay, there is a purpose for everything that God is doing. When God releases a move of the Spirit, don't just get excited that people laughed. The question is, why did God release that manifestation for people to laugh? Okay, so don't just be, oh no, people are laughing. Why are people laughing? There is a purpose for why God has released that particular move. Every move of God has a specific purpose. Praise the name of the Lord. One of the things we've looked at in the previous revival seminars is the purpose of actually advertising his work, okay, or mobilizing people to come to his work, especially when he begins to release what we refer to as peculiar manifestations in that revival. So take, for example, sometimes God will release a particular manifestation. And the reason for which he is releasing that particular manifestation is because he has noticed that no matter how much we advertise for our meeting, no matter how much we evangelize for our meeting, people will not come for that meeting. People will not come for that meeting. So how does he now draw men to this particular meeting? How does he draw people to come to this particular meeting? So what does he do? He says, okay, I want people to come to this meeting and get saved, but they are not coming. So what I am going to do is that I am going to release a peculiar manifestation that will draw men, that will draw the attention of men. So some of the manifestations are to draw men to the meeting. And when they come to the meeting, they find God. Okay, so like in the Quakers and Shakers movement, one of the things we looked at is that people were quaking and shaking in the move, in the revival. People were basically just quaking and shaking. So people heard that there is a move of God, Ukumaside. You know, people are just quaking and shaking. So people were coming to criticize, some were coming to witness, because people are always curious. And when people got to that move, they started finding God. If you hear that there is a woman that has come to your city by the name of Mariah Woodworth Etta, that sometimes she can start talking and go into a trance for 3 days, and then when she comes out of that trance, continues to speak from where she ended. If you heard that that woman has come to your town, won't you want to go and see? Won't you want to go and hear if you know that this is a genuine woman of God moving like that? Won't you want to go there and see what is happening? You want to go. So that's basically advertisement. A friend of mine told me, Of how that his father was part of the organization of a Benson Idahosa crusade some years back. And I think I shared it in the previous revival seminar of how that when Benson Idahosa came, he discovered that the crusade was not necessarily organized well. So he said, okay, people are not coming to the crusade because it wasn't properly organized. So he said, okay, take me to any mortuary where I can resurrect one dead person and then we can publicize it on TV. And then he went and he prayed for a dead person and the person came back to life. And that is how the next day news spread about that miracle and people came to that particular crusade. Okay, different types of acts, strange acts that literally draw people to come to the To the meetings, and when they come to the meetings, they find God. But if you are tied to manifestations alone, you don't understand why God is releasing those manifestations with you. You will be stuck with manifestations, okay? And when people come, you will not know what to do because you never understood the core, the heart of what God was doing in that revival. So some of the things God had started doing with my life, he only did it to advertise what he wanted to achieve, which was to bring transformation to the lives of men. Okay, many of the people I mentor now were just curious because they heard, oh no, there's a Pastor Cham. Okay, there's a man of God. Oh, before all this, you know, people were singing in tongues. You know, I was singing in tongues. Okay, I was seeing strange things by just singing in tongues. And before I even knew that people call it chanting in the spirit, some of them were just curious and they started coming. And when they came, they found God. So sometimes in a revival, God will start to release certain things to your life. He will start to give you peculiar manifestations, and you must understand them. Now, before I continue, praise the name of the Lord. Oh boy, I don't even know what to do with this thing now because I only have like 10 minutes and I have a bunch of notes. What do we do? Maybe 3 days was such a bad idea. okay. Yeah. Okay. Now let me give you. Maybe to conclude. Let me give you the heart of a move of God, for our nation. Okay. The heart of a move of God for our nation. For the longest time, revival in our nation has not been documented. Okay? It hasn't been documented. There are very few people that have documented revival in our nation. And so many things have not been preserved as far as the things that God did. Because revival was never documented in our generation. And there are some people writing amazing books around this. The other time, I think it was, is it last month or the other month or the month before last? I was talking to Pastor Kamlile Piri, who's written the book that I think I've recommended and I've talked about it here. It's called From Azusa to Zambia, okay? It documents the revivals in our nation. And he's talking about how that they are trying to have this project where they are talking to different men and women of God in our nation. And they are trying to basically document revival and some of the peculiar stories. Now, the first book they did, which is Azusa to Zambia, it's something that documents, you know, Pentecostalism, the revival that hit the nation. However, it didn't have the stories like you guys would love, like, oh, Maria Woodworth Etta, one time she was preaching and this happened. There's not so much of that documented in Azusa to Zambia. Of course, it's a good read, but there's not so much of that. But I think the next one they've been trying to work on kind of has some of those stories that many of the generals in our nation walked in. And I was asking him because I got very intrigued and I couldn't wait until the book is released. So I asked him a question. I said, can you tell me some of the stories around that revival, okay? Around the revivals that happened in our nations and some of the stories you've picked from some of the men and women of God. Now, I'll not mention their names because the book is still in writing. You probably read it from them. But then I was told of some ladies, okay? They are intercessors. They are women of God. I think they are pastors in times past. These moved with God in such a way that Pastor Kamlile was telling me that when he was documenting their story, he was so excited to hear of their story because these women would go on mission trips, okay? They would go on mission trips and never fuel their car. Every time their gauge would go low, they would begin to pray in tongues until the gauge would go up. You know, with these number fuel prices you're doing these days, I would really love that type of a manifestation, you know.
This is Zambia. It's not outside. No, these are Zambians, okay? And these manifestations, some of the manifestations are odd. Some of them are contemporary manifestations are happening now. He was sharing some of those manifestations with me, that people are walking with God in this particular fashion in our nation, and we don't know. And it's not something that happened like once. It's something that happens every time that the ladies stopped fueling their vehicle. They stopped fueling their vehicle every time they're going into bushes. When the gauge just goes down, they just stop and they begin to pray in tongues. Ropes, kepa baria sata, renda dia. Nje hafilife buiru, nje pepa na futu matang zibe fu. Rasemba baba, ka fu tank. And so I've really been moved by some of those stories, some of those encounters, and how people are moving with God in our nation. Okay, and how people are moving with God in our nation. Okay, I was going to share something, but I will not. But anyway, of course, a story I also once heard, it wasn't a second-hand story, first-hand story, of another man of God who hates bathing cold water. Okay, hates bathing cold water. And so when he had gone to pray, he came back. He found that the place where he had gone to shower from, it was in a school. He discovered that the showers there were not having any hot water. So he had left prayer. So he just got his key to his room, and he said the file of God, and then he threw the key into the bucket of water, and the water began to warm up, and he bathed a hot bath. Now, some of these stories, I don't even know what you do with some of them. So yeah, now this is not really what I wanted to share tonight. What I wanted to share was I'm laughing at myself because, you know, right now I'm looking at my tablet and I'm looking at all the notes that are on my tablet, and I've barely scratched the introduction of those notes. That's why I'm laughing at myself, and I'm wondering why I started on this particular train of thought. Yeah, but what I really wanted to speak on, maybe let me close with this thought. What I really, really wanted to speak on tonight was on the aspect of the fact that every time God is releasing a revival, well, maybe let me not say every time would be such a general statement, but in most cases when God is releasing revival, there are two streaks of the move of God that he releases. The first streak of that move of God is what we love to refer to more in modern language. We refer to these people as itinerant ministers. These are traveling ministers. Okay. And then the second wave of the move of God that he releases is the pastoral ministry. These are keepers of the vineyard. So God will always start with the itinerant ministers, usually involving evangelists, the evangelistic ministry. And after the evangelists have done their work, he releases a wave of the pastoral ministry. Why am I saying this? I'm saying this because some of you have to wait until the next wave for you to start functioning, because the streak of revival you will move into is in the clan of the itinerant ministers, the missionaries, the travelers, the evangelists. They don't have a desire maybe to even start a church. Their own desire is just to go to different territories and set people ablaze. Missionaries moving from place to place, setting people ablaze, doing crusades. And you will notice that after a time, crusades begin to fade away. The reason why crusades are fading away is not that God has done away with them. It's because that in that streak of revival, through the evangelists, through the missionaries, through the itinerant ministers, we gather so much territory and so much turf for the kingdom. And when we gather so much territory, that territory needs to be discipled. So the next streak of revival God releases is the pastoral wave of revival. And that is why you notice that we had that streak of revival in our nation. Okay, and so that's why some of you are praying, Lord, we want stadiums again. It's not yet time. Okay, it may not yet be. Okay, maybe let me not say it's not yet time, but it may not be time in the sense of its fullest manifestation. When it comes in its fullest manifestation, crusades and filling stadiums becomes the easiest thing. And I think that's the case globally. We are yet to get to that full manifestation because some years ago, we left a streak of revival in which crusades were prevalent. We had the Benny Hinn's, we had the Reverend Umar Ukpais in Nigeria. We had all these people doing all these crusades, doing crusades. Even though Christ for All Nations still continue with crusades, but even the weight of the crusades was not as strong as then. Okay, we had the Christ for All Nations, we had Dr. Nevers Mumba, all these people globally were doing crusades. And then what you noticed is that after we gained so much territory through crusades, many souls came to the Lord, many territories were won to the Lord, God said, okay, this is enough. Because we've gained so much territory, but the territory needs to be discipled. So he released a wave of the pastoral ministry. And so when he released a wave of the pastoral ministry, the job of the pastoral ministry is to disciple the new turf or the new territory that we have actually accumulated. Okay, so that is why even now you will notice that many of the young men of God, even in my age range, started with movements. Some of them are still in existence, but movements are no longer a trendy thing as it was. Okay, you are noticing a lot of them is pastor so and so. I pastor this church. So, because we gained so much territory through movements, but God is now saying all those people you want to the Lord, they need to be discipled properly. So he released a pastoral wave. So everyone wants to pastor now. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because if you don't understand of which streak God has called you into. Now, it's possible to be an itinerant minister and also a keeper of the vineyard. There are people like that God has allowed to merge two of these. But there are some that God has not allowed to merge two. Yours will be one. And sometimes when the streak of the pastoral ministry is on ground, you will notice and realize that those that are traveling ministers, all of a sudden it will seem like they're not traveling anymore. It will seem like they're not popular anymore. It will seem like they're quiet because the pastoral is what is in effect. God has to make sure that the turf and territory that we accumulated and occupied is being discipled. And again, you will notice that when it's now time, for the evangelists to start moving, they will start moving. And if God has called you to the streak of the pastoral, you can become jealous because evangelists will be moving, traveling nations, posting online. We just arrived in Germany. You are just sleeping and you wake up and you check the Facebook post in the morning. We are now currently in Denmark and we are doing another crusade. And you now say, this pastoral thing is not working so much. Let me stop pastoring and let me move into the traveling ministry. Okay, I'm glad God has confirmed it with me that he has allowed me to do both. So for me, that's a win-win situation. Whatever streak is on ground, I'm there to work. Okay, that is why I always teach our church that we are a local church with a global mandate. Okay, we are a local church with a global mandate. So sometimes I've told them, if you don't see me for 1 month, it's okay. We are a local church with a global mandate. Now, many of you will be in a place where you start to notice some of the people you started with are moving. You know, we are in, like Demena is saying, we are in Rio. Before you know it, they're in Asia. They're just moving and they're doing things. And you say, I just want to say that it has been nice. I am going on the field. And the moment you go on the field, God closes the evangelistic phase. Okay? That time of crusades and travel, he closes that phase and he opens up the pastoral ministry. And it seems that everyone that starts a church is the one trending, is the one happening. It seems the pastoral is just the one that is, you know, happening. No more crusades, they're not so much. And you now say, why did I leave the pastoral? So you must understand the streak of revival that God has actually called you into. Do you know that even with, you know, my father in the Lord, Bishop Imakando, one of the things you realize is that, you know, when Dr. Nevis Mumba was doing the crusades, Bishop Imakando was still there. Okay, he was still doing ministry when Dr. Nevis Mumba was all over the nation. Zambia shall be saved. It was the streak for crusades, okay, the Danny Pules and all this. It was the streak for crusades in that particular time. But then when the streak for crusades came to a close and the territory needed to be discipled, the pastoral ministry came into view. Now, everyone wants to be a pastor because you're looking at Bishop. Mm-hmm. He has got a big building. He's got this. There's this. He's got members. So you now say, I need to leave the revival ground. Let me become a pastor as well. No, he was patient enough to wait for his time. He didn't say, let me also start crusades. No, he was patient to wait for his time. The same is true with Kenneth E. Hagin. You know, when some of the men in his time, Kenneth E. Hagin was born in the time of which there were certain men like the Dr. Oral Roberts, men that were moving with God mightily. That was the time of Kenneth E. Hagin. Kenneth E. Hagin never traveled out of the country. Okay, never traveled out of the country. He was busy writing. He was busy doing stuff, writing books. Never. Men of God were traveling. People were moving. That was the streak of revival. When that streak of revival closed, the streak of revival that came was the streak of discipleship, the pastoral. So everyone now, you cannot finish Bible school and you have not read a Kenneth E. Hagin book. Okay, you may finish Bible school, but at least some of the material, even if your lecturer didn't tell you, some of it is some Kenneth E. Hagin material, because he's addressed almost every subject. Okay, but he waited for his time. The reason why I'm telling you this is that we are in a time where it seems that, a lot of you are in the itinerant category. Your own will be to move around and just set nations ablaze. Some of you, God will allow you, like me, to do both. I thank God for his grace, for his love towards my life, for favoring me so much, for loving me so much that he's allowed me to do both. So I'm excited for both. I'm excited to disciple God's people in a church, and I'm excited to travel. But I feel that many people fall under this evangelistic crusade type of arrangement where they're supposed to move from region to region, setting men ablaze. But it seems that every effort that they are trying is futile. It's because the time has not come to its fullest manifestation, because God still wants to disciple territory. He still wants to disciple territory. And when he's done discipling territory, he will say, now we have got enough manpower. Let us claim more territory for God. Let us claim more territory. That is when you start to see names. People that are being cooked in the secret place. You thought that the people that are there are just the ones that you are seeing. Oh, he's a pastor. This church is a pastor. There are people that are being cooked, but their streak of revival has not come. When that streak comes, you will be so shocked. And that is why I treat everyone with honor, because some of them are just waiting for their streak of revival. The moment the evangelistic move gets to its fullest potential, you will have different household names. You will start to hear of people that you never knew. It's because they had been
in a place where they were preparing. So I want you to understand what God has called you to do in this particular moment, in this particular revival, in this particular move that we are in. Understand what you are supposed to do. And when God allows for your time to come to its fullest potential, literally everything you touch will become powerful. Praise the name of the Lord. Hallelujah. That was me talking so fast and I'm so tired. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.